Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, live at First Horizon Park. Sounds open their home season tonight, pregame at 6:20, first pitch 6:35 on 94.9 The Fan with our man Jeff Hem, who will join us at 2 o'clock. He's Nick Frazier. I'm Chase McCabe. Brandon Bigsby, a.k.a. Brando, back at the studio. We're getting Tim Hasselbeck all lined up. We'll have him here in just a second. We'll also have a four-pack of tickets to Thursday's game to give away here in just a few minutes. Let's bring in Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. Tim, I got good news for you. You don't have to deal with Joe this week.
Oh, wait. He's on vacation? What's he doing?
He is. He's down in Key West. We don't really know what he's up to, but he's hanging out, and he'll be back on Thursday. But he was very sad that he was going to miss his visit with you.
I'm surprised that he didn't, you know, step away from the swim up bar to join the segment, you know? Quick question though. Do we think he keeps his t-shirt on when he swims? Like, what do we think he does? Does he keep it, or does he wear floaties? How does he look in the pool? What are we thinking?
I don't know if I want to envision that, to be honest with you, but yeah, I would say floaties. I could see him with the a lot of sunscreen on the nose, maybe some goggles and some floaties.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know what? Considering it's a lot around lunchtime, we probably should change the topic.
Yeah, I agree.
Tim, I could see Joe wearing floaties on his ankles to hold him up above water if he wants to do the full spread eagle, like if he wants to do that. I feel like I could see Joe doing it with his ankles along with his arms. So Joe's definitely a floaty guy.
He's a floaty guy. All right, that's good to know. Well, that's good to be gone with you guys either way.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. The owners' meetings going on right now, and so that gives GMs and coaches an opportunity to speak. One thing Robert Saleh said that I thought was interesting, and this is a defensive guy talking, but what Borgonzi had said, they're going to look to take the best player available at four. Saleh said edge rushers are playmakers too when asked about getting a playmaker in this year's draft. As a quarterback, how do you feel hearing that from a head coach?
Well, I think that he's exactly right. And, you know, when you look at impact positions, you know, I think, you know, running back, especially for rookie running backs, they can be an impact position because, those guys touch the football a lot. So that's the case. Certainly quarterback's the case. Receiver could be the case because they score touchdowns. And then I really do think in terms of closing games, creating negative plays, you know, the importance of third down. I think it's a fair assessment that edge rushers are playmakers. So I just think it's a fair assessment of the position and the impact it can have. And when you look at, you know, the highest paid players in the game, it obviously, you know, you have the quarterbacks that are in the mix. You have receivers that are making a lot of money because they score touchdowns. Running back because of the longevity of the career, of that position is a little bit different. But elite pass rushers are guys that are paid as, quote unquote playmakers, just when you look at, the compensation. So I think it's fair. I think it's true. I don't know that it necessarily gives us the information we're looking for in terms of, where the Titans are going in the draft.
Do you think, though, with Borgonzi saying best player available, which how many times have you heard a GM say that? I mean, that's the typical answer. But looking at the Titans roster, don't you think that is the right move? If it's Love, if it's Bain, if it's Reese, I mean, any of those guys, I don't think you can necessarily go wrong there if you take one of them at four.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you, because while GMs can say, okay, we're just going to take the best player available, what if you have massive holes on your roster and your best player available, is a, I'm making this up, obviously, but is a quarterback, but you're not going to draft a quarterback because you have one. So, I do think when general managers say we're going to take the best player available, some of that is to protect themselves when they do draft somebody because it's a team need. you could say he was the best player on the board. He was the highest rated player, you know, that we had on the board. And, you know, unless you're the person that actually did the rankings, you don't know if it's true or not. So, you know, let's just say they end up, you know, taking Bane, but they had, you know, Bailey ranked higher. Like, in that environment, like, they're going to say, we got the highest rated player on our board when, you know, in fact, they didn't. So I think guys say that. I think sometimes you can be in, if you have a good roster, you can truly say, listen, this is the highest ranked guy we have. We're going to take him. But I think if you have holes on your roster, the roster management and where you're allocating your resources does matter quite a bit. And that's why you can say, look, the need at this position is greater than the difference in the rating that we have on these two separate positions.
Tim, a lot of people believe that next year's draft is going to be really, really strong and deep. Whereas this year's draft, I think there's definitely good talent, but not to that level. Do you think that teams are going to keep that in mind with some of the decisions they make in this year's draft, whether it's, you know, taking a guy at a certain position or trades that they may make?
Yeah, I've heard people kind of reference that as it relates to quarterback. And the only thing I would say is that I feel like people are wrong about that all of the time. You know what I mean? Where you sit there, but next year's quarterback class is going to be so good. And then you get there and you're like, what? What are you talking about? Like, that's – no, it's not. You know, and then other years where, you know, they kind of, you know, say, you know, it's not a great class. And then you look up and there's, you know, three guys that go in the first round. So I think it's way too far out to project. Like, I think we probably all agree. Like, at one point, people were talking about Carson Beck like he could be the top pick in the draft, correct?
Yeah.
Like that, it didn't happen. Who was the kid at Ole Miss years ago? I think he went in the year where he was going to be the number one pick in the draft, and I don't think he got drafted when he came out.
Who are you talking? Yeah.
Knees or something like that. What was his name? But anyway, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like, he was good. Like, there was all this talk. It was going to be this and that, and then next thing you know, he played his senior year. It was a disaster, and it didn't work out. So I don't know. I think the process is – it's a critical process, the draft evaluation process. And I think it's real easy to just shine some love on these guys that haven't gone through the process and have, you know, every wart uncovered, you know, on them. And then I think there's also a lot of pressure to playing, you know, as a, you know, when you go into the season with incredibly high expectations. And so sometimes guys just don't deliver in that environment. And then there's an element where, you know, part of the NFL projection is exactly that. It's a projection. It's not always just based on production. And so, you know, with that, the expectations change when there's this projection of, hey, this guy's a first rounder. And then you watch him play and you're like, well, he doesn't dominate the way a first rounder dominates. It's like, well, because the NFL teams are projecting based on, you know, other factors other than production. So, I don't know. I don't think people are waiting because they think, you know, what's behind door number two next year is just going to be so significantly better.
We will have more with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. We're live at First Horizon Park, continuing our conversation with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck and the head coach at Innsworth. Nick?
Tim, when it comes to the Tennessee Titans and the offensive line, Mike Borgonzi said, quote, keeping all options open for the interior line. Just nobody really knows the future of Peter Skoronski. Titans have roughly $63, $64 million. I know they're trying to really work out a deal there. But overall, do you see the Titans going after another offensive lineman before the season, or is that money allotted for more of a Peter Skoronski deal?
Yeah, I think Skoronski would be somebody they want to keep, and so I do think that, you know, there's going to be a portion of it there. I think you're always looking for,
linemen. You're looking for versatile linemen. I just, when you look at, you know, the season and it being long, guys missing because, listen, maybe it's a week because of a concussion. Maybe it's an MCL that has you out for a couple of weeks. You know, it can completely derail your season. So, you know, I think that versatile offensive linemen are always going to be of value. And I think that, you know, teams are always going to be looking for guys like that, honestly, throughout the entire year. You know, this time of year into training camp when injuries start to come up. I don't know. And maybe I'm just thinking of that, like if you guys have seen the Frank Ragnow story from Detroit, obviously he retired. He was a great player in Detroit, played through a bunch of injuries, retired. The Lions are making him repay some of his signing bonus. It just reminds me what guys are going through, and you don't know when it's going to end for somebody just because of the physical toll of the position. And so, yeah, I think they'll draft a lineman. I think we'll see them sign at least one more veteran offensive lineman, you know, before, you know, training camp starts. And I think it might be after, you know, mini camps because, you know, guys they draft maybe aren't as ready as they thought they were. I mean, I just think that will be the routine for the Titans as it will for some other teams.
Yeah, and sticking on the offensive side of the ball, Will Levis, obviously Mike Borgonzi's mentioned that he hasn't committed to a backup quarterback per se. But when it comes to Levis, he gave him a little praise. What do you see in that? Is that more of just trade capital or is that actual truth?
I think it's trade capital because it just feels as if, you know, the Mitch Trubisky signing, like Trubisky's not signing to be the third guy.
Right.
And they're not giving him the money that they gave him to be the third guy. So now could you keep Levis on his rookie contract as a third? Yeah, you could, especially considering, you know, you're not paying, you know, veteran starter money to your starter. So it's not impossible for them to keep all three, but I also don't want to sit here and say that there's actually a competition for the backup spot because I don't believe that there is. But that also doesn't mean that they're going to trade him. Now I will say, you know, I did run into Will this offseason. I've seen him working out. He looks great. And in many ways, like he's always looked great cause he's so physically talented. But he appears, you know, obviously when he had the surgery, he appears healthy, appears excited about the future. And so I do think he ends up being somebody that's very desirable to other teams outside of just the Titans.
Interesting. On a broader note, when it comes to the league as a whole, the NFL Referees Association obviously looking for some sort of increase in pay. NFL has already mentioned that they're already looking for D1, D2, and D3 referees to kind of fill in for those interim referee spots. What do you think that does for the product aspect of the NFL going forward if they don't come to a deal?
Well, Nick, I just tell you this. Like, all the listeners that watch college football know that some of the college football, and let me first say, officiating is hard. Okay. Yeah. So like high school, college, pro, whatever, it's hard. Now, college officiating, you just watch games. It's bad. Like, period, it's bad. And so, you know, this idea that the NFL and whatever billion-dollar business industry that it is okay with saying, we're going to go get some people that are bad at their job at the college level and have them do it at the pros, I think is insulting to, you know, the NFL referees that, by and large, are not perfect, but when you think about the degree of difficulty of what they do, I think it's an insult to them. I would also say, and obviously there's a little bit more runway to vet guys out in terms of officiating and things of that nature, but we can talk about the Fail Mary and some bad officiating back when we had replacement refs, you know, after, you know, during that lockout. But we also had officials, you know, on Facebook talking about, you know, their fandom of their team and then going out and officiating games. Like, remember what a disaster that was. Yeah. It wasn't just that they were bad at officiating the games. There were other factors to this that I think is going down a really dangerous path in terms of you can't have that in an industry where there's so much gambling on games and things like that, to have, you know, officials that honestly just are not professional enough to be up for the task. So, look, the NFL is going to negotiate hard. I think the referees have a right to negotiate hard, but I think the NFL has got to be really careful thinking that, you know, it's a piece of labor that can be easily replaced, because I don't think it can be.
And another factor into all this, the first game of the season is going to be Melbourne, Australia. And being in Melbourne, I'm a rugby fan, so the Melbourne Storm is one of their top three teams in the rugby league right now. They're all big fans of that just aggressive style of football. So the fact of the matter is, if the NFL Referees Association has the interim refs for that first game of the season and it comes out to be a bad product, it's just a bad look for the NFL as a whole.
It's an awful look for the NFL. And then, you know, the other part of it is, because of the amount of detail that we get on replays and things of that nature, like, our expectation, because, you know, you can say what you want about the NFL officiating. They get things wrong. They're always going to get things wrong. But they get a lot of stuff right. Like, the NFL officials, I'll give you a call, like, that's the example. In high school football, illegal man downfield not being called is one of the worst missed calls in high school football. Like, it's unbelievable how poorly it's officiated, okay? Mm-hmm. In college football, it is only officiated slightly better. In NFL football, they almost never miss it. It's fact. And so I think that, you know, while NFL officials are going to get things wrong, they are also operating at a level significantly higher than the crews at other levels of football. And so, and then the game moves faster, and, you know, the players are faster. There are more cameras in terms of the scrutiny on calls and the ability for the viewer at home to know if the official got the call right or wrong. And, you know, I think it will no doubt impact the confidence people have in the product that's on the field.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. I want to go back to the offensive line, and we were talking earlier, you know, having the opportunity to work with the late, great Floyd Reese for as long as I did. I would laugh when, you know, we would talk O-line in the draft, and he could be like, you know, I can get a guard fifth, sixth round, something like that. Do you think that offensive line is in most drafts the deepest position to find throughout the draft, where you can actually find a player that's going to be able to play for you and develop into an NFL player?
I do. It's got the lowest interior offensive line. It's got the lowest bust rate in the first round. And if you, you know, kind of use the threshold of, did the guy make it to a second contract with his team as the determination of if he was a bust or not, interior offensive line has the lowest bust rate. So center and guard combined. So, you know, and then I think there's an element, and you know, Floyd was probably like that. You know, some guys feel really good about their offensive line evaluation, their ability to identify, you know, what's important for a guy to be able to make it as an offensive lineman in the NFL. And it's way easier at center and guard than it is at tackle, just because, you know, tackle in some respects, you know, there are minimum requirements to be able to be good at tackle.
Yeah.
That, you know, kind of outside of the framework of that have had some success. And so that's why I do think people can miss at tackle more than they can miss in the interior offensive line. So, okay, I wouldn't disagree with Floyd's assessment of being able to find guys. And there's a long history of undrafted free agents that have gone on,
sure,
you know, to have amazing careers as centers and guards in the NFL.
He is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Ensworth. You got any spring practices coming up?
Well, yeah, we do. We got 7 spring practices coming up. It's funny. I've actually got a couple of text messages today from, you know, like Virginia Tech and Austin Peay reached out saying, like, hey, can you get us the spring break graph or spring ball graphic? I'm like, man, we got to get on. It's right around the corner. So, yeah, we'll have 7 practices in May. And it'll be good. Be good. We got a lot of multi-sport athletes over here at Ensworth, so it's great. So we're gonna squeeze it in inside playoff baseball, playoff lacrosse, and even some track meets.
Love it. Gonna be fun for sure. Appreciate it as always, Tim.
All right. See you, fellas. Good to be on with you.
Yeah. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Ensworth, joins us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Must listen to radio. We'll react to some of the things he had to say and continue the conversation from First Horizon Park. He's Nick Frazier. I'm Chase McCabe, 102.5 The Game.